left, so if you could join us tomorrow night at 6. Then on Wednesday, we started the book again, the 11th time, and we finished page 17, There's a Solution, about the two powers, the power of the fellowship and the power of the program, and the power of the program is the cement that binds us. And we talked about, finished up with why they wrote this volume, this book, and then we're going to pick up on page 21 or 22, and there's a solution, and we're going to look at the two things that make us powerless on Wednesday night. So if you can join us, we're three different parts of the book. We're finishing up on Sunday. We'll do family afterwards and a vision for you, and we're going to do a couple stories, Dr. Bob's nightmare and one or two other stories, and then we'll start again. As I mentioned, we have the site experiencethebigbook.org. It's got 200 episodes and 80 thoughts. Steve, you got an announcement?
Yes. Next, not this Sunday, the 11th at Crestview Shelter House, starting at 10 a.m., will be the anniversary of the 2100 Club, the old timers meeting. The doors will open at 10. The meeting will be from 11 to 12:45, and food will be served between 1 and 3. They ask you to bring a side dish, and I pass.
Thank you, Steve. Ed, you got one?
Ed, Eklund Alcoholic.
Hi, Ed.
Tomorrow, Carbondale has their anniversary. They eat at 12, and then speakers after.
Good.
Thank you.
And we're going to be doing the December Memorial, and we need three speakers, and I've got one that I've lined up. I've asked a few people to think about it, and let me know if you have a desire to talk at Memorial in December. We need three. We need two more. Stu's going to do one. He was volunteered. Any other announcements before we start? I'm going to ask God to set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Amen. So today we are in the powerful pages of the fourth step, which is very misunderstood. At this meeting, we've gone through the instructions on the fourth step, I don't know how many times, 20, 30. And we started on resentment last week. We did one on the introduction to the fourth step and how what the fourth step is all about. It's an inventory. It's like a business inventory. And we looked at the page 64, the analogy between a business inventory and a personal inventory. We want to face and be rid of the things that's blocking us. We want to get rid of the crap on our shelves. Because a business that keeps bad inventory doesn't make any money. Christmas is coming up, and Walmart and Target are, you know, they're very competitive. They're going to order everything they can that people want to buy. And they're not going to hold on to any of the stuff that nobody wanted last year. And they make money. Now, as alcoholics, we hold on to all the stuff that didn't make any money. and we prize it. And we worship it. And we don't want to let go of it. And we go broke, right? So the fourth step is the ability to see the truth about our thinking. About our thinking and related to three areas. So that's all it is. Our anger, our fear, and our conduct. And Joe and Charlie make the point that our mind is like a 7-Eleven. We all make a decision in step three that we want God to be our director, right? Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yes. Yep.
Good. And we don't want to direct anymore. Well, the problem is God can't direct a 7-Eleven that's full of fear, shame, and guilt, and anger. And when you walk into the we don't have 7-Elevens anymore in Kansas, I guess. We're no good. But we have quick shops. You walk in the quick shop, you see all that stuff on the floor, right? They're going to sell. That's all my anger. And all the stuff in the glass shells is my fear. And if that's not enough, in the back room is my shame and guilt. Now, Joe and Charlie make the point that if that's your mind, how can God direct your thinking every day? So the fourth step is to be willing to look at my personal inventory, my personality, my thinking, my whole life, and face and be rid of the things that I was wrong about. And then hopefully, after you've done 4 through 9, you're at what we call entering the world of the Spirit. And then you learn how to live with God each day, and you learn how to watch each day for stuff getting into the quick shop. You don't want to let too much fear, resentment, or shame and guilt get in there every day. So the 10th step is how we face and be rid of it each day. And if we do that, then our days are pretty good. And the 11th step, we inventory at night. We look how well we did. We look at what's in our 7-Eleven and how we faced and be rid of the things that are blocking us. And so last week, we start on resentment on page 64, which is the manifestation of self-centered thinking. Resentment in itself may not be good or bad, but alcoholic resentment is the result of being self-centered. So when I'm self-centered and I look at the world all day long, Joe and Charlie said I have a resentment machine. It's like an NFL replay machine. Anybody else have that? And we go through the day and we take pictures of what's happening. And when we don't like what we see, we keep replaying it all day long. Some of us have done it our whole lives. Now, the thing that's wrong with that is if it's 11 o'clock in the morning and I'm replaying what happened at 8 o'clock, I'm not in 11 o'clock. I'm in 8 o'clock. And so at 11 o'clock, I'm dominated by something that happened at 8 in the morning. Now, God can't direct my thinking at 11 o'clock if I'm still angry about something that happened at 8 o'clock. So we have to learn how to deal with that each day. And in step 4 is where we learn how to deal with it for the first time in our lives. And resentment is a confusing term. I've met a lot of people in AA who don't have any resentments. They've never been angry. I know it's hard to believe, but they sit there and then they tell me that. So what resentment is to me is a negative emotion towards a human being. It's a judgment of a human being. It's a determination that they're not worthy, they're no good, they're doing something wrong, they're bothering me. It's endless. Resentments don't have to be these major upheavals in your life, because we get sick over small resentments. If somebody bothers me, I'm playing God, right? And I'm the only one that allows them to bother me, and if I let them bother me enough, then they're going to dominate my life. So there are two ways that we look at resentment in step 4. We look at our whole life, all the times people bothered us, all the people that we judged, all the people who made us angry, all the negative emotions associated with that. And then we learn how to face and be rid of those negative emotions towards all those people. So when you finish the 4th step for resentment, you shouldn't be angry at anybody anymore. You should have forgiven them and seen the truth about them. And we're going to be looking at that in the next 2 weeks. I thought I'd review page 64, this paragraph on resentment. And I'm just going to cover 4 or 5 paragraphs today. And then next week, I'm going to look at the powerful paragraphs on how we be free of anger. Most people don't realize that the 4th step, and they do it off of worksheets or in treatment, but the 4th step in the big book has 2 powerful things. It teaches us how to be free of anger and how to be free of fear. Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we use those techniques every day whenever I get angry or afraid, so that I don't have to have anger or fear dominate me anymore. So it says resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Now, number one offender, it's an offender against what? My spiritual peace, my relationship with God, right? It offends my relationship with my fellow man. There's so many ways that resentment is the number one offender. And It destroys more alcoholics. That's the word they use. Destroys. Now, how can anger destroy me? Because when I'm angry and I don't have a relationship with God and I'm living in anger, I have no power not to drink. Anybody else have that situation? And if I have no power not to drink and I'm an alcoholic, I'm going to drink again. So most times when people say they go out, you've heard that, I go out. I don't know where they go. But they go out. What there really is they're traveling with a mind full of resentment. And their resentment takes them to the liquor store. Now, we think that we choose to relapse. Anybody think that? Alcoholics don't choose to relapse. Your thinking does it for you. Your resentments choose you to relapse. Your anger, your negative feelings. You have no control. We have no power. So we have to get a positive look at how we deal emotionally with the world. And what we really want in AA is not to celebrate how many days we have a drag, but celebrate our emotional sobriety, how we are in relationship to the world, how we're handling life on life's terms. It stems all forms of spiritual disease. Now, we talk about alcoholism as a disease, and it's a disease that has certain manifestations. If somebody has diabetes, they have a high sugar level, right? And they may have other symptoms related to the high sugar. An alcoholic who has the disease of alcoholism, what we see is that they can't stop drinking. Anybody have that problem?
Yes.
So an alcoholic, when they start to drink, they don't stop. Now, if you have that problem, the solution's very simple, right? You don't drink. But alcoholics have another problem. Their mind tells them to drink even when they don't want to. Anybody else have that problem? And so your mind will tell you to drink even though you've sworn off at 10 o'clock, at 11 o'clock, you're in the liquor store. Now, those are not the causes of alcoholism. That's the result of being an alcoholic. So if you're coming into the doctor's office and they want to know if you have alcoholism, they'll ask you, can you control how much you drink? And they'll ask you if you have the power of choice. And you'll say no. And they'll say, well, you're an alcoholic. But what's the cause of that? The cause of it is your spiritual disease, your separation from God. You're at dis-ease with the Spirit. And you're running a life on self-centeredness. And because of that, you can't live sober. And so you have to get down to the root causes, because what does it say on page 62? What's the root of my problem? Self-centeredness. Now, I always thought it was them. Anybody else think that? Anybody have a list of them when you came in here? You may have a them today. I mean, if you're an alcoholic, we always got a few thems hanging around. But it's not them, it's me. It rooted my life in my self-centered thinking. And so that's the dis-ease with God. And it says we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. Now, I was talking to someone today, and they're discussing their ongoing resentment with somebody and their behavior. And I pointed out that that person's spiritually sick. It is always going to be spiritually sick till they get a solution. And so, their behavior is still going to always bother you. Or be not bother you, but their behavior is going to be the behavior of a spiritually ill person. And so we're going to learn on the next page how we deal with spiritually ill people. It says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Well, we straighten out physically because we're not drinking, and we straighten out physically with the world because we're not in conflict with everybody and everyone again. How do we straighten out mentally? We could see the truth about alcohol. Not only that, we could see the truth about our thinking, right? And now our judgments are wrong. And it says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. So that's the first instruction on the four step. You get a piece of paper, and you write that the resentments, you put them down on paper. And you list three things: people, institution, or principles with whom we were angry. So you list all the people with whom you were angry. You don't have to be angry with them right at this moment. If you're ever angry with anybody in your life, put them down. Now, we're not doing a tome poem here, and an Encyclopedia Britannica of all your anger, so you don't have to list everybody, but you want to get a pretty good idea of how angry you were your whole life. Because I know about you, but I was angry at a lot of people. There were a lot of people that were just bothered me. And they were people that got in my way of my thinking. Institutions are like the police. Anybody ever get upset with the IRS, the police, the government? We have an election coming up. That's just a resentment machine. principals with whom we were angry. You watch the ads. Oh. The ads are just one resentment, and it gets confusing because you watch one ad, this guy is the strip club lawyer, the next guy is stealing from the armed forces, and you can't figure out which one's which. I don't know how you would figure out who to vote for. All right, so then the second thought is you ask yourself why you were angry. That's not hard. Now, the way Joe and Charlie and others suggest you do this is you make a list of all the people you're angry with. You get your notebook and you make names. I say 50 to 100, but you want to list the top 20 or 30 that you immediately come to mind. Now, if you don't know who you were angry with, here's a thought. Think about anybody you ever had a relationship with. Any of your relatives, anybody you ever worked with, anybody you ever went to school with, and you'll start getting names. I mean, you'll think about 6 years old, somebody in kindergarten. The kindergarten teacher didn't pick you to be in the show, and you were angry, and this and that. And so you want to get an idea of it, because self-centered people get angry a lot. And alcoholics or self will run riot, right? And then we ask ourselves why we're angry, and they don't want you to write much about that because we don't really care. Because half the time it's not even true. And then the third column is in most cases why we were angry. And I didn't know this till I worked the steps out of the book, that it was my self-esteem, my pocketbooks, my ambitions, my personal relationships were hurt or threatened. I was sore, I was burned up. We're in the top of 65. So why? I'm never angry unless I'm threatened. So fear, threatened in some way, causes all my anger. My self-esteem, what I think about myself. My money, my ambitions, my person. Notice it's always mine. It's not God's. It's my view on how I want things to go. Anybody else have that situation? And we call it a grudge list. We set opposite each name our injuries. Was it my self-esteem that was injured? My security, my ambitions, my personal or sex relationships would have been interfered with. If they are, you're going to get angry. So when you get angry today, you're threatened in some way. Somebody's threatening you. Now, a lot of people have road rage. I don't personally have that. I cause it, my wife says. But people will get road rage. Well, what's threatened in your road rage? Well, what's threatened is your self-esteem. How could somebody dare cut in front of Michael the Magnificent? It's my highway. I mean, how could they do it? And they're so stupid. And we want them executed, right? Because they're getting in our way. I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's alcoholism. And so I've caused a lot of people want to execute me, my wife says. She gets a lot of resentments towards me because of my bad driving. So anyway, we're not going to go there today. That's another talk. So then it says, they give four examples. I went through them last time. They're just brilliant. And it says, we went through our lives. So I'm going to go through my life. Nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty. Now, if I don't want to be thorough and honest about it, then I'm not going to learn the truth. Now, honest means that I want to be willing to look at when I was upset. The truth of it is going to come out in the next few instructions. And so it says, when we were finished, we consider it carefully. So you're going to do three columns. How long can it take to write 50 names, three sentences on what they did, and what was affected? You'd think you were asking alcoholics to do a nuclear physics analysis of a Hiroshima bomb explosion. I mean, it's not. It's very simple. Now, people make it very complicated. I don't think we should make it complicated. We should make it simple. And all you want to do is put it on paper, because when you put it on paper, it's not in your mind anymore. Now, the other thing is, carry a notebook around, and all week, you'll start thinking of names. God will give you more names. And if you've been in recovery a while, you can think of some names today. They're going to come up. And then you do this automatically so they don't have power over you. So the first thing apparent, you do your first three columns, is that the world and its people were often quite wrong. Anybody like that statement? Now, who decides that they were wrong? We did. And so we're looking at our wrong thinking. We were wrong to think that they were wrong. And I decide that they're wrong. And it says to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us got. Now, what's wrong with me saying people are wrong? I'm playing God. I'm seeing them in a certain way that's negative. I'm not seeing it the way God sees it. Now, if God is love, anybody think that's a good analogy of God? God is love. God's not going to be judging and angry at all these people. Now, the other thing that occurred to me just from this line is that people are concluding that I'm wrong a lot. Now, it took me years in recovery to realize that I might have caused some people to think I was wrong. They might ever have that light bulb go off that maybe you're in their resentment list of other people. It took me several years, and people concluded I was wrong. Concluding people are wrong does not help me spiritually. It's not a good way to live. So what we learned just from those two statements is that we watch on page 84, we're in the world of spirit, when we see resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, or fear, when these crop up, when I'm starting to see something wrong in my life, I ask God at once to remove it. I don't have to do that anymore. So it says the usual outcome was the people continue to wrong us and we stayed sore. So we're sore, they're wronging me. Now that's called self-pity or self-resentment. Sometimes it's remorse. I felt bad and then I was sore at myself. We get mad at ourselves, putting ourselves in a position where we get angry. But who put me in that position? I did. See, it's all me. It says, the more I fought and tried to have my own way, anybody try to have your own way? The worse matters got. Anybody try to argue with somebody about your resentments? You don't want to come between an alcoholic and their resentment. It's not a pleasant thing. And the more I fought and tried to have my own way, the worse matters got. Now, we talked about that on Sunday night and to wives, how we want to have different conversations now that we're in recovery with people that we're living with or associating with, and we don't want to see them as wrong. We want to see them through love, patience, tolerance, kindness. And we want to react differently to human being. But now they're talking about you're looking through your whole life. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Now, what was our triumph? They don't say, but my triumph was I got my way. Or I thought I was right. And then when I think that and I go on, I'm not in a good place. It doesn't last very long. And it's very, very harmful for me to build self-esteem through my judgment of others. And I did that for a long time. I felt better when I judged somebody else worse. Anybody else do that? It's very sick. And I think that's a description of alcoholism. We feel better because we judge everybody else to be bad. So here's the key two paragraphs. It is plain. That means it's obvious. Now, it should be obvious by now, but it's not obvious when you come in the rooms, that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. So in other words, when they talked about the big book, and it came out in 1939, what'd they say in the first line of the big book? It says we had a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body, right? And we wrote this book to show how we had recovered. Now, my seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body is rooted in my resentment and my anger and my self-centered judgment. And it leads only to futility and unhappiness. Now, how can anger lead me to be futile and unhappy? I can't have any peace and serenity if I'm angry. I can't have any usefulness to others if I'm angry, right? And my unhappiness is my own fault. I decide I'm unhappy. I didn't wake up this morning and God said, now, Michael, you're going to be unhappy at 10 o'clock because you're going to go to Walgreens and you're going to have to wait in line behind somebody who has 80 coupons. You know, it sounds silly, but alcoholics are laughing. I'm the only one who makes myself unhappy. Why? Because I decide what I need, remember, and I'm managing the world. So I'm going to have a futile and unhappy life, and I'm going to get angry a lot if I'm running the show. Now, here's a great line. To the precise, notice the words, precise extent. That means to the amount that I allow this. So who starts the resentment going? It's not them and their behavior, it's me. To the precise extent that I permit myself to get angry, guess what I do? I squandered the hours that might have been worthwhile. Now, I think that they missed the boat here when they wrote it. It shouldn't be hours, it should be days and years and my whole life. I don't know about you, but I look back on my life before I came in here and I just squandered it with fear and anger. How can I have any hours that are worthwhile if I'm in anger and fear, right? Now, where is God? Does anybody know where God is? God's in the now, right in the moment. If I'm in anger, I'm in the past. If I'm in fear, I'm in the future. There's no God right now. So if I'm sitting in my chair at home and I'm worrying about the past or the future, God's not in the room with me. And so we learn in AA that we want to be in the now. We don't want to spend any time in the fear and in anger. And this is the beginning of that. It says, the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. Anybody have that hope? So we want to maintain and grow a spiritual experience. And what is a spiritual experience? A relationship with God. So if I want to have this and grow in it, I can't have resentment. Why? Because I can't experience God when I'm angry. The business of resentment is infinitely grave. Has anybody ever got really angry here, acted out, carried on, and then a few hours later said, gee, that was bad. Nobody else has done that? And I mean, it's bad. How can you have a spiritual experience when you're doing that? So I want to maintain and grow a spiritual experience. The business of resentment is infinitely grave. Now, grave means fatal, right? Now, not only is resentment bad, but it's infinitely fatal. They don't mince any words in this paragraph. And the problem I see is that a lot of new people in AA don't read this paragraph. They don't read these two pages and understand what's killing them. It's not them, it's me. And it's my anger and my judgment. Not only is it infinitely fatal, grave. Now, if you don't know what that means, guess what they say? It's fatal. Now, they're not telling you that your resentments are fatal. They're telling you that their resentments are fatal. And if you have what they have, if you have alcoholism, your resentments are going to be fatal for you. And it says, when I harbor such feelings, now I read this for a long time, I didn't understand it. When I harbor the feelings of negative feelings of anger or judgment or ill will or bothered or disturbed, when I harbor it, now harbor is a safe place. We had a couple hurricanes recently. Now, when the hurricanes came, they had boats in the on the shore, right? They didn't take the boat out and put it in the middle of the hurricane. That wasn't a good idea. Nobody did that, right? They put it into a harbor, which is a safe place so that the tides, they're protected. So I didn't realize, but what I did my whole life was I put all my anger into a safe place in my brain that nobody could get to because I didn't want to lose them. Is that crazy? But alcoholics do that. And it says, when I do that, when I harbor these feelings, what do? I shut myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit, capital S. I'm in the darkness. I'm separated from God. I can't see God's power. I can't see the sunlight of the Spirit. Now, here's a warning. If you do this and you don't change, the insanity of alcohol returns and you're going to drink again. Anybody believe that's true?
Yep.
In other words, you're always an insane alcoholic. We're always that. The only way we're not is when we have a relationship with God, and God gives us sanity to see the truth about it. And if I'm blocked from the sunlight of the Spirit from God with my anger, I can't see the truth. Now, I said the set-aside prayer because I want to see the truth. I need to set aside all these things that are blocking me from you, God. And one of them, the most important, is my anger. And it says, with us, to drink is to die. Physically and spiritually. Now, you can drink a long time and not die physically, but you're dead spiritually. People drank a long time before they came in here. How was it? Wasn't a great experience. You wouldn't have come in here. It says, now here's the thing. If you want to live, anybody want to live, raise your hand. You have to be free of anger. Now, this is misread a lot. What people say is, oh, I don't ever get angry. It doesn't say that. It says, I want to be free of the power of anger. So I will always have my self-centered glasses and see things that I don't like, but now I know how to take them off and put the God-centered glasses on. I don't have to be angry. I don't have to be angry. I don't have to stay angry. I used to have a 5-minute rule. Now I'm down to 20 seconds. I don't do it all the time. I'd like it to be 10 seconds. I only get disturbed for 10 seconds, but you know, some people, you know, they deserve a minute of disturbance. But you get the point. I don't want to be angry. Now I'm going to react negatively because we always see things through our self-centered glasses, but then I stop at steps 6 and 7, say, God, I don't like the way I'm seeing things. Change my mind. Help me see it differently. Help me practice the opposite. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. Brainstorm is not brilliant thinking. In 1939, it meant rage. Anybody have rage in here? They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. I'm going to stop with that. Poison. Now, I heard somebody say that resentment is me drinking poison hoping you'll die. Anybody like that one? The other thing, and I'll end with this, is that I used to sit in my chair and plot people's executions at 7 o'clock at night. Not all the time, but I'm being facetious, but I would do that. I would sit in my chair and have very negative thoughts about somebody, and they're home watching Big Bang and Happy. Now, how'd that work for me? Alcoholics do that. Anybody else do that? So we don't want to do that anymore. Now, next week, if you show up, if I didn't piss everybody off, we're going to look at the 4 paragraphs on how we get free of anger. So the big book sets it up, and they always tell you the problem. And they've told us the problem very specifically today, haven't they? And then next week, they're going to show us the solution. So I'll open it up, and thanks for your time. And, Marky, congratulations again. Thanks, everybody.